The Virtual Curbside is a production of the Utah Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Utah AAP, working together to improve children's lives through education, advocacy, and networking. Hi, this is Paul Workus from the Utah AAP. Welcome to this week's edition of the Virtual Curbside, where we bring pediatric providers together with subspecialists to get smarter about all things pediatric and better acquainted as a community of caregivers. The Virtual Curbside is brought to you in part by a generous grant from Primary Children's Hospital. Primary Children's Hospital, the child first and always.
Welcome back to the Virtual Curbside. This is your host, Paul Workus, with Rachel Weir this month, talking about ADHD. How are you doing, Rachel?
I'm fine. How are you, Paul?
Good. We really appreciate you lending your expertise to this. Do you have anything you'd like to disclose about any possible conflicts?
No, I don't have disclosures or conflicts of interest.
We talked a lot last week about the diagnosis of ADHD and what it is and what it isn't. We want to start our discussion this week talking about treatment. And I think that the first thing we usually think of when we think of treating ADD is which stimulant should we use? And I wanted to sort of push that off a little bit in interest of talking about some of the other things we should maybe think about as we're treating ADHD. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Do you think that everyone with a diagnosis of ADHD is going to benefit with treatment with stimulants at some point?
Well, I mean, the data show that most would, yes. I mean, there are pretty high treatment response rates with stimulants, but there certainly are cases where kids might not need them. You know, certainly if you had more mild symptoms, if you had parents that were really concerned about, you know, using medication and wanted to try more behavioral interventions first, that's certainly reasonable. Then, of course, if you maybe have teens where you're worried about a substance use problem, or maybe kids where the parents have had a substance use disorder, sure, or have an active substance use disorder, and you really don't want to prescribe a medication that's widely, widely shared and diverted, I think behavioral interventions would be helpful.
Is there an age below which you would be very reluctant to consider stimulants?
Yes, I think sometimes we do get consults on 3, 4, 5 year olds, and people really are hesitant in that group. And they should be. A lot of preschoolers are very active, have a very hard time following directions, and a lot of those will not end up having ADHD once they mature just a little bit and kind of get to regular school. But I have had to occasionally start stimulants in that age group when parents are just at their breaking point.
Sure, sure. It does seem like sometimes it's a worthwhile thing to just talk about what expectations ought to be for kids. When you are likely to be inattentive and impulsive. And sometimes I think as a pediatrician, it feels like sometimes helping shape expectations can be helpful. Mm-hmm. But I always do try to leave the door open, because some of those inattentive, impulsive kids are going to continue to be inattentive. Mm-hmm. So you've sort of touched on non-pharmacologic options. What sorts of therapies are available to kids? Are there therapists who specialize in treatment, in non-pharmacologic treatment of ADD?
Yeah, there are some who will do behavioral therapy. You know, usually it's going to be therapists who like working with younger kids compared to teens. Parent management, like classes and things like that, like through CHAD of Utah and other organizations, that can really be where you get a lot of benefit, because a lot of this is how do you provide that structure, appropriate limit setting, those kinds of things when you're talking about younger kids. Unfortunately, a lot of it is just on the parents to, you know, do the work. And then along those lines, just, you know, in-home therapy too, where you can really get someone in there and, you know, kind of see what's going on and come up with behavior plans for parents. Cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, what we are always talking about, like for mood disorders, anxiety disorders,
everything.
Yeah, for everything. probably a little bit stronger effect when you get to teens and young adults who have more self-awareness and motivation to be able to control some of this on their own. It would be very hard to just use a straight CBT model for like a younger kid with ADHD.
And I should mention parenthetically, you just mentioned CHAD, and we'll link to that in the show notes as well. Can you share with people what CHAD is?
CHAD of Utah, you know, it was started as an organization, you know, mainly for parent support groups, lots of psychoeducation on their webpage, and they are active in different states. So there's a CHAD of Utah that's active, and they'll, you know, sometimes have some of these classes available for usually for a small fee, and then parent support groups and educational materials, samples on like, what should you ask for with like a 504 plan or an IEP, just helpful resources like that.
We'll come back to those in a minute. It turns out it stands for children and adults with ADD. They tricked you with the H.
Yes, I know. I was thinking, what does that stand for? Okay.
But they have a lot of great resources, and it's a good place to look for resources. What about skills training for kids? You know, I think sometimes, you know, teaching kids to use a plan or teaching kids to do team organizations, does that help?
Again, I think once kids are a little older, once you're getting to that junior high school age, certainly that can be very helpful. And, you know, there's new apps and things like that that can help as kind of reminders for younger kids. That's going to be more challenging. But if it's in the context of a behavior plan with school, like, okay, if you bring the planner back signed and there's some kind of reward system, that can definitely help that younger age kids.
Yeah, definitely seems to help to kind of close the loop sometimes so that parents and teachers both know what's expected going both directions.
Right.
So you mentioned 504s and IEPs. How is it most effective to go about assisting families in getting the educational support that they need?
Mm-hmm. I think the better the note you can write to kind of support that the child would benefit from that type of intervention. I've had people come for testing or come for a full psych eval because they've said, you know, the school just won't accept this because it's just a really brief note that says diagnosis ADHD, didn't have, you know, really even enough documentation to support a diagnosis. So I think if you can kind of write a good note that really does go through the criteria and help support the diagnosis, you know, that you ruled out other conditions, that can be really helpful. And then of course, just, you know, you probably, you know, have a number of like form letters you guys use in pediatrics. And I think if there's one that it can be very simple, but, you know, just saying that this child has this diagnosis, I would support them receiving, you know, 504 accommodations in their school setting to assist them. And there's a lot of different resources that will suggest, you know, what typical 504 accommodations could be for someone with ADHD. And generally, school psychologist, you know, would sit down with parents or maybe the teacher also and say, these are the three or four that we want to target that we think would best fit the needs for your child.
I've found that it's also been quite helpful too to help parents understand that they can request testing, the global learning testing at school, and walking them through that. We use a formula for that as well. Parents frequently aren't aware that if they request it in writing, it's going to happen. I think the schools are always willing to do good things, but they're stretched so thin. It's difficult, I think, to get the right outcome, although I think they are almost always interested in making the right outcome happen, in my experience.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Let's talk about some, and you already mentioned that family therapy can be helpful, partly too. I think sometimes it helps because this can be a disruptive diagnosis, that supporting a family, not only in helping their child to achieve, but to feel unified as a family over the whole thing is a favor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it can be very disruptive to have a child with severe ADHD that, you know, is taking 20 minutes longer than everybody else to get ready to leave the house, or, do chores and then what's the consequence and those kinds of things. So,
right. Let's talk about some things that come up fairly frequently. What about diet and ADHD? People talk about various food dyes and various foodstuffs. Yeah. How often is that an issue in the literature?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot looking at diet and do additives make a difference? People have wondered about all these things, preservatives, food colorings, all these kinds of things. And there really has not been much that, you know, supports that diet makes a big impact. Now, that being said, I think with any mental health condition, just any kid in general, of course, you generally want them to be on a pretty healthy, balanced diet without, you know, a ton of sugar, you know, not a lot of soda and caffeine and things like that. So, but there's not a lot to really support making huge dietary changes.
Does sugar cause attention problems? And is there evidence for that? I mean, we hear it all the time.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. But as you say, well-rounded, nutritious diet. And I do think that the whole idea of having something that sticks with you, complex carbohydrates.
Not being hungry during your school day helps, yeah. You know, a lot, of course. So, yeah.
There goes the sponsorship from Tootsie Rolls. I should be careful what to say. What about supplements going the other direction? Are there things that you can give kids that are going to make their ADHD better?
There is some evidence that maybe fish oil can make a difference, some impact for ADHD, some improvement in symptoms. Again, these are pretty small effects, though, when you're comparing to like prescription medicines. But it certainly is worth a trial, especially for someone with mild symptoms, or, you know, maybe for someone who's getting treatment, but they don't have complete response and the parents would rather try a supplement than increase the dose or something. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking some fish oil anyway. So.
Sure. What about exercise? Does exercise help?
Yes, absolutely.
That was an unqualified yes.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, exercise is just excellent for everything, right? But it absolutely is helpful for kids with ADHD. It really helps if they can get some physical activity during the day. It helps their brain settle down, you know, more easily at night. It helps them sleep better. It just is an all-around positive thing. It's one of the first things I ask about, especially if I'm doing a consult and someone says, you know, they really haven't responded or improved much, you know, because your point about video games earlier and like screen time is, you know, that's sometimes kind of what we're seeing is someone's going straight home and then, yeah, they can focus on video games for 6 hours, but you know, they can't fall asleep and they're emotional and getting really hyperactive right before bedtime. So it's really important.
So do we understand the mechanism for why kids can play video games or watch videos and sit in one place for a long period of time despite their attention issues?
It's really hard to understand that. And it's hard for parents to understand that also. It's hard for me to understand at times too. But we do know if you're really interested in doing something, you know, you can kind of improve your focus enough to perform well for that. Whereas if a task is just completely disinteresting, it's much harder.
And going back to the physical activity, is this physical activity in general? So is this having a program of making sure you get plenty of physical activity, or is there any immediate relief? If somebody's feeling antsy, does it help to have them get their wiggles out?
Yeah, I it does provide some immediate relief, I think, and to the point about what's going on in the family, it can be very helpful if, you know, that kid can go out for a bike ride or, you know, I was going to say trampoline, but I know you guys don't like trampoline. if anything like that can occur in the moment, that can be, you know, helpful, and it makes the kid feel better too.
Last week, when you were talking about making the diagnosis, you mentioned that sleep disorders can be a problem. I think it's also, it almost goes without saying that some attention to sleep hygiene is huge with attention issues.
Yeah, it's incredibly important. And it's so many kids with ADHD suffer from sleep problems too, because, you know, the ADHD doesn't turn off at night. You know, even if they are getting treated with medicine, often the medicine's worn off by that time. So just being able to kind of settle their body and their brain with like a very regular routine can be really helpful.
What about other after-school activities? Do they help?
Oh, absolutely. And that's another one. You know, if you look at like protective factors against like childhood mental health, just in general, it's, do you have something that you do? Do you have a church activity, a school activity, some kind of club or sport or something where it feel like, you know, they have something they do that they're good at, that they enjoy? You know, it provides additional structure. We know that structure is just so helpful for kids with ADHD. They really kind of need that, even though it can be difficult for the person who has to provide that structure, but it is very helpful.
Especially as you sort of mentioned before, helping kids find a niche where they feel like, especially because in school, in lots of settings, they're getting a fair amount of negative feedback. It's nice if there's something that they're good at that they can really shine, I think. Mm-hmm. So we just said that video games are a problem. On the other hand, I've also seen that there's a video game that's been licensed for treatment of ADHD. Can you tell me about that?
Isn't that incredible? Yeah, I think that was a big surprise to people, but the FDA last year allowed marketing of a prescription-only video game device, Endeavor, for kids age 8 to 12 with attention problems. They were quick to say it can be a part of a comprehensive treatment plan, not the entire treatment. So you probably can't, you know, if you were needing, you know, a moderate dose of medication for ADHD, this probably would not replace that, but it could supplement what you're doing. So I have not prescribed this, but apparently you get a activation code from your doctor and then get a 3-month prescription to download this video game through an app.
It's for like a half hour a day or something.
Yeah, they recommended 25 minutes a day, you know, 5 days a week.
Does it cut you off at 25 minutes, or can you?
No, I don't think it does. And also you can't, you know, you can't beat the game. So you can just keep playing. Your parents would have to cut you off. But, you know, what they found is it really seemed to activate the prefrontal cortex, which is so involved in, you know, ADHD and is also such a critical part of, you know, where we kind of make decisions, make planning, control impulsivity. And that translated into improvement in focus for kids.
I'll be interested to see where this goes.
Do you get to learn
any Fortnite-like dances from playing it?
I don't know. You can go look at like a demo of it if anyone's curious.
Okay.
I think it's on their webpage. Yeah.
Is it pricey? Do you know?
I believe that on the webpage, they do say if you had to pay this, like you can apply for, you know, a reduced rate, but I believe it was maybe just over 100 for 3 months.
We're going to talk about stimulants next week because you can't talk about ADHD without talking about stimulants, but right. Which kids should be seeing a psychiatrist instead of me?
Well, I think anyone where, let's say you started some treatment and let's say you did like 2 trials of 2 different medicines, stimulant or non-medicine or non-stimulant medicines, and there was really no response, or maybe the kid had side effects and you kind of wanted a second opinion on, should I try another one or could this be another condition? I think if you had somebody that had really high anxiety and maybe so that made you nervous about starting a treatment, or if you're really concerned, gosh, this seems like it could be bipolar, not ADHD, like the kid is really irritable, moody, like crying, you know, just kind of moods all over the place, more than you would expect with just ADHD, where someone might have, you know, kind of like brief mood symptoms, especially if they're disappointed about something, like some kind of limit got set. But I think those would be really good consults.
And Rachel, if somebody in the great state of Utah really needed to talk to a psychiatrist about a problematic kid, are there any programs like the call-up program where I could talk to somebody 5 days a week?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we have a state-run child psychiatry consultation line. So we have a board-certified child psychiatrist answering the phone Monday through Friday from 12 to 4:30 on our call up line. And I took a call similar to that this just last week about kind of starting a non-stimulant in addition to a stimulant. So even if your patient, you know, has an appointment with a psychiatrist that's coming up, and you know, you even just want some help in the interim, definitely give us a call.
And you know what? It's a great program. We really, really appreciate that you're there, because, you know, it's just an incredibly great program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks everyone for listening. Next week, we're going to talk about stimulants, because in contrast to this being about attention issues, we have been stringing you along for a long time, testing your patience. So we appreciate that. Next week, we'll talk to Rachel about stimulants and some of the other treatments. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your expertise, Rachel. We'll look forward to talking to you next week. If you have questions, please send them to questions@vcurb.com. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We look forward to getting together again next time. The Virtual Curbside is available on iTunes or wherever you find your other favorite podcasts. Be sure to like us and subscribe. We want you to like us both because we're needy that way and because that will help other listeners like you find us. Check out our website, vcurb.com, for supporting materials, schedules, and other great stuff. The Virtual Curbside is an educational production of the Utah chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. The opinions expressed in this podcast, while carefully considered, are ultimately the opinions of the presenters and not necessarily of the American Academy of Pediatrics or our employers. And remember, the content of this podcast shouldn't be seen as a substitute for seeking actual personal medical care. If this is an emergency, hang up and dial 911. Otherwise, schedule a visit with a caring healthcare provider to try to get to the bottom of your concerns. None of this could happen without Elisa Stoddard, our extraordinary executive director of the Utah AAP. Many thanks to Tim Cosgrove for his help on the website and logo design. Production design and editing thanks to Phil Workus, who also composed the theme music. See you next time.